Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, welcome back to the second hour of the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, and this is indeed the Main Street Radio Network. Do we have our guest? I think we do. Yes. That's so great. We have our illustrative board op. He's more than a board op. He's our producer, Derek, and so many people that make this show possible. Well, Marine veteran, attorney, former federal prosecutor and Republican candidate for Senate in Massachusetts, who ran against Senator Ed Markey in Massachusetts, John Deaton, joins us right now on the Alan Nathan All-Stars. Hi, John.
Thank you.
A pleasure to have you with us. Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. Happy Thanksgiving. Yes.
Yeah.
Happy to be here with you.
Yes. Did you ever think that you would watch a group of elected officials encouraging the military to disobey orders? And are they, is it really true that they're just trying to tell them to disobey illegal orders, or is something else going on? What is going on, John? Do tell.
Well, what's going on is that you have people interjecting politics in the place where they need to not interject politics. Listen, I am a former Marine judge advocate. So I was on active duty. I trained, you know, Marine generals and Navy admirals at the Naval War College. From the day you're in boot camp, you learn about lawful orders, unlawful orders, that you're not to obey unlawful orders, you know, where if they're someone tells you to kill civilians who are unarmed, that you won't be, you can't go and say, hey, I was ordered to do it. They're taught that from the beginning. We have a process. So, and it works because it keeps politics out. There's an entire protocol for that. So when you have elected leaders getting up there, you know, saying, you know, the things that they have just said, they're interjecting politics. And I asked him, when one of these young sailors or Marines or soldiers gets court-martialed, are they going to pay their legal defense fund? Are they going to come and pay for them when they get court-martialed because they decided to be influenced by these politicians and they say, well, I'm not going to obey that because I think it's an unlawful order? They're not. And when they sit in Leavenworth for 10 years, are they going to visit them? So it's disgusting what we're watching.
You know, and it's so sneaky because if they said disobey lawful orders, because they've been calling everything Donald Trump has done unlawful, but they can't prove that it is unlawful. So they're the ones that are doing the dog whistles, right? The dog whistle is, oh, well, we've told you that everything Donald Trump is saying is unlawful, and therefore you shouldn't obey. And then, just like the tax that wasn't a tax under Roberts, they can say, if they get called out on it, well, we're only telling them to disobey illegal orders, not legal ones. You see how they get around it? Are they going to get around it? Because I know some of these people, including Mark, forget his last name. I think you know. Mark, whatever. They
Mayor
can get Zeller, around it.
But,
yeah. They can say, well, we're only telling them to disobey illegal orders. But then they didn't have to make an announcement for that because it's already on the books.
It's already on the books. It's like I said, there's an internal process. Troops get taught this from the beginning. So, no, they're playing politics. They're interjecting politics and they're interfering, you know. And listen, there are federal laws. It is unlawful. And it is a federal crime if you encourage mutiny, if you encourage subordination.
That's what I'm after. Yeah.
Yes, it is unlawful to encourage that. And this could be seen as elected leaders encouraging enlisted or young officers to disobey. And this is the thing. I've seen two of them interviewed, and they're saying, okay, well, name one crime, one unlawful order that President Trump has issued.
They can't.
And they can't. And they're like, well, I'm not saying that they has. But you don't need to remind them. You don't need to remind them. That's like, you know, me walking around saying, follow the law, follow the law. Like, you don't need to do that. So they are being sneaky. And sneaky is the right word that you've used. And you got to stay out of it. Keep politics out of the military. It's the one place where, you know, they have to realize, Karen, Congress is the only body of employees. We're going to call them employees, where you don't have to do your job. Well, in the military, you do your job. You know, there's many people in the military who didn't vote for President Trump, or if Kamala would have won, who wouldn't have voted for her. You still do your job, despite whether you agree with who happens to be the commander in chief. Only in Congress, if they don't like the occupant of the White House, do they decide, well, I'm not going to do my job. Like, they shut down the government, and they still got paid, but no one else got paid.
Right, and so
they got to understand that in the military, these young soldiers and sailors and Marines, they're susceptible. And if you get in their head and you inject these partisan politics, what happens when one of them does disobey a lawful order? They're going to get prosecuted. They're going to get court-martialed. Their life would be ruined. And then, you know, the politician is just going to say, well, I didn't tell them to disobey a lawful order. I told them to disobey an unlawful order,
you see? I know that some of these people are under investigation right now, these elected officials. Do you think there's any teeth there? Or could they get away with it simply by saying, well, we only told them to disobey an unlawful order? What bothers me so much about it, it's all innuendo. They've been depending on their supporters who don't have a knowledge or a history or anything to begin with. So they'll follow them anywhere they go.
I think right now you're right that there isn't enough probably. Now, if they go further, if they cut a second video and they push the envelope some more, I wouldn't be surprised to see Pam Bondi and the Department of Justice, you know, maybe take some kind of action. But right now they think they're cute by playing their little political game of, you know, we really didn't tell them to do anything other than follow the law.
And yeah, so why did they bother?
It's disingenuous. Right.
It's horribly disingenuous. Here's a good example. Remember when everybody laughed when people said, okay, the minute they reopened the government and the Democrats had their noses bloodied because they didn't get anything and they pretty much got blamed for the government shutdown, they immediately moved to the Jeffrey Epstein story and they had nothing. They had no ammo in that gun at all. Everybody knew it. And yet, there is a certain number of people in their constituency, a good many, who have been trained to have their hair go up and down, hair on fire, the minute you mention it, and they don't care if they're evidence or the facts. They simply don't care. Well, Trump is a womanizer, therefore he must be a child molester too. They don't care about the thing that we cared so much about growing up, that you tell judges, and that is to look for the facts and don't be biased before you have evidence. All that's been thrown out the window right now. So, I got carried away there. I'm sorry.
You're 100% right.
Yeah. How do we fight this sort of thing when they play dirty? We already know they play dirty. We've got somebody who knows they play dirty, but we have to learn also how to disabuse them of this notion that they can, well, they put out so much propaganda. It's hard to keep track of it all.
I do believe that they overplay their hand. And the key is to not, in my opinion, to overreact to them. You know what I mean?
God.
But we stick to the facts and we'll be all right.
Yeah, like I just did, right? John
did
Deaton, I can't wait to talk to you again. Marine veteran, attorney. We'll have you back and we'll talk more. Thank you so much for your time. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have more of the Alan Nathan All-Stars right after this. Don't go away.
Saving Gotham City is serious business, but family comes first in an all-new DC animated series now streaming on Prime Video. Bat-Fam reveals Batman in a whole new light. At home, taking care of a newly formed family, which may be even tougher than fighting crime. Batman, Alfred, and young Damian Wayne are joined by a few new residents to Wayne Manor, including Alfred's free-spirited grandniece Alicia and a recently reformed supervillain named Claire. Together, this very unique family faces the challenges of daily life while protecting the streets of Gotham City. Executive producer and showrunner Mike Roth.
I think kids will enjoy seeing Batman at home, taking care of the cat, setting up family game night, and just being a dad. The show has lots of action, big laughs, and plenty of heart as this group of misfits come together to form a family.
Don't miss Bat-Fam, now streaming on Prime Video, because this time, justice will be served family style.
Prime Video introduces June Farms, a charming new unscripted series filled with love, drama, and farms. June Farms, which sits on 120 acres in New York's beautiful Hudson Valley, is a well-known destination for high-end weddings and events. The farm hosts eccentric locals, well-heeled travelers, and occasional celebrities who come for the unique accommodation and incredible service. But sometimes not everything goes as planned. Demanding guests, unpredictable weather, vendor mishaps, and a property full of animals can all wreak havoc on the farm's intricately planned events. June Farms owner Matt Baumgartner.
This is a high-stress job to say the least, especially during wedding season. But despite the chaos, my employees and I all come together, kind of like a weird, dysfunctional family, and create magical memories that last a lifetime. I think viewers will enjoy getting a look at what happens behind the curtains and how, incredibly, everything seems to fall into place.
Don't miss June Farms, now streaming on Prime Video.
About 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and more women under 50 are facing the disease than ever before. Dr. Lori J. Kirstein from the American College of Surgeons has more.
Being diagnosed with breast cancer at a young age can create unique challenges. Many young women may be busy building their careers, relationships, or families, and suddenly face tough medical decisions that can affect the rest of their lives.
Surgeons are seeing this shift firsthand, and research is underway to improve treatment options and better understand how to support women with breast cancer.
Receiving support during and after breast cancer treatment is essential. Younger patients often have a harder time finding resources that fit their needs, from fertility preservation to guidance on recovery after treatment. The American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer has resources to help address the needs of younger women and all women with breast cancer.
Learn more at facs.org/breastcare.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, and we have our very next guest, founder of SAVE. He is a former faculty member at three universities, former federal regulator at the Department of Health and Human Services. Also, he's authored over 100 peer-reviewed articles and editorials. Dr. Edward Bartlett joins us right now on the Alan Nathan All-Stars. Thank you, Dr. Bartlett. Good to have you along.
Hey, great to talk to you, Karen. And you can call me Ed or Edward or whatever you want to call me.
Okay. But don't call you late for dinner, right?
Don't call me late for dinner. Yeah, exactly.
Especially on Thanksgiving. Don't call him late for dinner. I don't know why it is. We always eat dinner at 1 o'clock on Thanksgiving, but that's a whole nother story. We could probably do 2 hours of talk radio on that alone. But we have something very important to talk about. There's an article in The Federalist by Nathan Stone that says, to win the war for America, the GOP needs to realize it's happening. You cited this article, right? And tell us why that's so important. We have to know that we're in a war for America, don't we?
Well, yeah. So first of all, let me emphasize, Karen, that I am a longstanding conservative, and I'm a loyal member of our local GOP party in the area where I live. So my concern is, when I go to GOP meetings and so forth, I don't hear anything. The narrative I hear is still the same. It's a good narrative, don't get me wrong. But I don't hear specifically about, hey, it's men that we have to reach out to, young men. And here's an example of that. The recent vote in New York City for Zohran Mamdani, 84% of women, young women, and voted for him. In contrast, the only demographic that voted against Mamdani were white men. But I don't see any evidence that the Republicans are doing any outreach at all to white men or men in general.
How would you recommend that they do outreach to white men when there is kind of a counterintuitive thing? I was talking about this on the radio, another radio show earlier this morning, when we were talking about the gay people that are in the Trump administration. Nobody knows they're gay because they don't lead with it. They don't say, right, hi, I'm in the Trump administration and I'm gay. Nor right. would the left care, because they don't really care about gays or any of these minority groups. They care about loyalty to their radical left agenda. So conservatives have never led with, well, we got to go out and find more white males. We don't do that. We try to win arguments based on ideology. So how do you do that?
Well, Donald Trump, actually a big part of his election strategy was to target and reach out to young men. He was doing podcasts. He was connecting with Elon Musk, who's highly regarded among young men, voter registration drives to young men, and overly presented himself as a positive, masculine role model. So I think Donald Trump did I think he had the formula exactly right. And I'm a little troubled. I don't see, you know, at the state level or local level, I don't see Republican Party apparatus is sort of trying to replicate that approach.
And here's another strange thing, Ed, is that Republican Party apparatuses in the first place have been pretty sluggish on all fronts. If we had to depend on Republican apparatuses, some of which have been decimated, my home state is Colorado. Colorado has been decimated. There really is no Republican Party to speak of in Colorado. And I think we have to do it in a different way. Maybe are you thinking that maybe people are sitting on their laurels because now we have Donald Trump in the White House again?
Well, I think that part, definitely part of it. I should mention I grew up in Colorado, so I totally know what you're talking about.
Well, it's that, not the same place I grew up in, that is for sure.
And, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah,
I'm with you on that one. You know, when I go to meetings of my local Republican GOP party, the narrative is still very much the same. You know, reduce government spending, reduce the size of government. And all of that is right. I totally agree with that. But we have to add to that old narrative if we want to be winners in the next election. I mean, Republicans suffered some pretty surprising setbacks in the recent November elections, and wasn't just Sobhan Mamdani in New York State, New York City. Even in Mississippi, the Republicans lost their supermajority in the Senate. So, I just think I want to, you know, maybe say there's a little bit of complacency, and mm-hmm. we need to get over that.
Mm-hmm. So if you were in charge of a Republican party and you got to be that apparatus, what would you push that wouldn't be complacent at all? What's the message you want them to carry?
I would say continue with the old message of reducing government spending, increasing accountability to the public, et cetera, et cetera. But as far as, you know, who are the people we're trying to reach in particular, it's men. Men are what's called the power demographic. It's thanks to men that Trump won the election a year ago. And we have to sort of say it loud and say it proud.
Well, how about this? What if it's not about government spending at all? What if it is about fighting back against the notion that masculinity is toxic and that sheepdogs, men who protect their family and their wives and their children in a responsible fashion, which is what sheepdogs do, is something to be celebrated?
You know, I've never heard that analogy to sheepdogs, but I'm with you. I totally
I love sheepdogs. That's what women were sold a bill of goods when they were taught that what they wanted was Alan Alda and not Tom Selleck. The truth is, women wanted Tom Selleck, just like they wanted Rhett Butler, not Ashley Wilkes in a previous generation. So,
right.
And women have to find that out the hard way. And you've seen the way that the left has been trying to make believe that they like men when they don't. They don't. They only like men if they're wearing a dress. So, very interesting. I love this idea of trying to find a message for that. How can people find you at SAVE, by the way?
Yeah, saveservices.org. Saveservices.org.
Dr. Edward Bartlett, thank you so much. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Karen. You take care.
Yeah, you too. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the Alan Nathan All-Stars on the Main Street Radio Network.
Open enrollment season is here, and it's a great opportunity to make sure your health plan still works for your needs and budget. It's important to keep in mind that enrollment periods vary depending on how you get your health insurance. If you're on an employer plan, it usually happens between now and the end of the year. For Medicare, the annual enrollment period runs from October 15th through December the 7th. And for the health insurance marketplace, most states, it runs from November 1st through January 15th. When you're comparing plans, look beyond the monthly premiums. Check that your doctor and your prescriptions are covered. Review mental health and wellness benefits. And see if extras like dental, vision, and hearing programs are included. Digital tools and 24/7 virtual visits can also make care more convenient. And with so much misleading information online, always check the source. If something seems unclear or too good to be true, ask your doctor or your health plan before making changes. For more, visit uhcopenenrollment.com.
The holidays are a time for celebration, and for many that means indulging in delicious foods that are often high in fat and cholesterol. But for people living with uncontrolled high LDL cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, too much of these foods can further increase LDL-C and increase risk for heart attack or stroke. Besides diet and exercise, many people take statins to maintain healthy LDL-C levels, but even that may not be enough for some. Registered dietitian Leanne Bloden is VP and Head of Clinical Development at Esperion.
Statins are the standard of care in cholesterol management, but may not be enough or may not be tolerable for patients who have what is called statin intolerance. Alternative medications are available to help people who cannot take statins at all or at recommended levels. Patients dealing with statin intolerance can ask their healthcare provider about alternative medications to help manage their high bad cholesterol and reduce the risk of a heart attack or stroke, not only during the holidays, but all year long.
Visit statinalternatives.info to learn more.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Ellen Nathan All-Stars. It takes time to get used to saying that, Ellen's All-Stars, and this is one of those times. We're going to just move right in to our very next guest, Kenneth Abramowitz, founder of SaveTheWest.com, a website dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself. He is the author of The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. That's a lot to defend America from. Ken Abramowitz, thanks for joining us on the Alan Nathan All-Stars.
Sure. Yeah, great to be with you as always.
Yes, yes. So Israel killed Hezbollah leader in Beirut. What does that mean for the greater situation there in the Middle East? And then, of course, we want to talk about the tumult that's going on here in America as it relates to Israel and the Middle East.
Yeah, sure. Well, Israel focuses on eliminating, or they call neutralizing or eliminating bad guys, and they particularly focus on eliminating bad guys at the top. You know, if you go back to World War II, what was the problem? There were Hitler and 25 criminals at the top, and we ended up killing 19-year-old kids and thousands of them and millions of them. In retrospect, you could argue, shouldn't we have just gone after the 25 criminals running the Hitler Nazi organization so that we didn't have to kill however many millions of 19-year-olds that we killed? Mm-hmm. So that's what Israel tries to do. Israel specializes in killing the leadership so that maybe the next leader and the next leader and the next leader will choose a different path.
Yeah. I haven't seen the propaganda about that yet. Have you? Is it already happening? I haven't seen that one in which Israel is the bad guy for killing a Hezbollah leader in Beirut.
Well, I mean, Hezbollah is considered a criminal organization, so you don't usually get penalized for killing people who are part of Islamo-Nazi, I call them Islamo-Nazi death cults.
Yeah, but Ken, we're living in an insane time in which 2 days after October 7th, 2023, people in this country took it as a cue to get to work reframing the entire narrative, making Israel the perpetrator and Hamas and the terrorists as the victims. This is what happens today. I mean, if we were living in normal times, it would be a different story, but we continue to see the propaganda arm of these entities operating widely in the United States. Your thoughts?
No, you're exactly right. The Islamo-Nazi death cults kill people. That's their physical arm, but they use propaganda. I call it cultural warfare. Is their other arm. So they're masters at cultural warfare, and so Hamas and Hezbollah and Iran and Qatar sent their agents into America long ago, and then they activated the agents on October 8th to criticize Israel for what Hamas was doing. So Hamas committed genocide on October 7th. They killed 1,200 people. And by the way, they would have killed 10 million people. They would have killed everyone in Israel if they had gotten away with it. So what they did very cleverly is they reversed reality. And then so you then have Hamas, which is Muslim Brotherhood, aided by Iran and Qatar, flip the narrative and accuse Israel of genocide before Israel had even much attacked Gaza. Very clever. And so they have thousands of agents, and they invaded 200 campuses, and they pretended to care about the Palestinian Arabs, which they couldn't care less. They use Arabs as cannon fodder because the Muslim Brotherhood wants to take over the world, and this is just the first inning of taking over the world. So they created this illusion of victimhood and an illusion that Israel is the bad guy. So very clever, very clever. And they and we in the West, Israel, America, are not so good at cultural warfare. And so that's why they succeeded in changing the narrative, even though it was a false narrative.
You know, because there's so many aspects to this, here's what I want to ask you. You and I have been talking about this for a long time, and the people in the know understand that the so-called Arab Spring that happened during the POTUS 44 administration happened For us, it was no spring. For America, in the 20 million plus open borders during the Otto Penn administration, we know that there were numerous Islamists who were allowed into our country. And people are only now beginning to figure it out that all of a sudden there are these enclaves of Islamists around the country, some of them, many of them running for office, for elected office and getting elected in order to subjugate the people in a form of government that we do not have in this country. I'm going to ask you a really tough question. You've been watching it for a long time. Is there anything to be optimistic about as far as people finally figuring this out? What needs to happen for us to stop this? Because some people talk at great length that maybe we shouldn't allow people who aren't born in this country to hold elected office. Well, by the time you get that done, it'll be too late. What can be done at this juncture, in your opinion?
Well, we have to do about 100 different things. That's why I wrote a book called The Multi-Front War. I identified that America had 100 different challenges, and we had to address all of the 100 simultaneously. Now, it's very difficult to do 100 things at the same time.
Donald Trump seems to be able to do it, Ken. It's amazing. Right. It's because he doesn't get much sleep, but he does a lot of things at one time. We got to do that too. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
That's exactly right. Now, so one obvious thing is to require national security clearances for all public officials. Anyone who's running for public office has to pass a national security clearance. That's one thing we can do. Another thing we can do is insist that all new public office holders pledge allegiance to the Constitution and Bill of Rights. And in particular,
don't they do that when they take the oath of office, though?
Yes, but we have no mechanism to follow up. So if someone says, "Oh, I just became a new whatever, and I pledge allegiance to America, Constitution, Bill of Rights," as soon as
we're losing
are
you,
in office,
we're losing you. Could you stand near a window? Okay, go ahead.
So yes, so we need an enforcement mechanism. So if someone says, like Mamdani, that I'm Muslim and I don't believe in life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness for everybody in the country, we need an enforcement mechanism to remove them from office and say, we only accept people who follow American rules. American rules are based on the Constitution, Bill of Rights. They're not
correct.
Based on Sharia law. So there's so many things we have to do, but bear in mind that elections are determined on a state-by-state basis, not by the federal government. But the federal government could step in and provide guidelines to the states and say, here are some basic things that you have to do if you want to see money from the federal government. So that would be an important step in the right direction.
And you have to have a strong president, which we do indeed have. And the radical left is working 24/7 to try and figure out a way to get into power next time around. That is for sure.
Yeah, that complicates life because you have leaders have to pretend that they're fighters. They have to fight with both hands. And when you have one hand behind your back because your disloyal opposition is making life difficult for you because the disloyal opposition is working for our foreign enemies, you can see how difficult it is to be.
That is so true. So what did you think about Kami Mamdani meeting with Donald Trump? What was your honest reaction to that?
Well, I was disappointed. I was expecting and hoping for a fight, but President Trump didn't want to fight. And so he has his own personality, and that was the decision he made.
Yeah, but I think that meeting and what happened there has yet to unfold, that is for sure. Ken Abramowitz, founder of SaveTheWest.com, happy Thanksgiving to you. And we always look forward to talking to you. Thank you. We're going to take a quick break and wrap up the show with a wonderful guest. Don't go away. You're going to want to hear this when we get back on the Main Street Radio Network.
Respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, is a common, contagious, and potentially serious virus that can affect the lungs and breathing passages. GSK's Sideline RSV campaign is highlighting the risks for older adults, especially those with certain chronic conditions. With more, here's Dr. Leonard Friedland from GSK.
Each year, about 177,000 adults 65 and older are hospitalized in the U.S. with RSV. Adults aged 50 to 74 with chronic lung or heart disease, complicated diabetes, or weakened immune systems, and all adults 75 and older are at increased risk for severe illness.
Vaccination is available to help prevent severe RSV.
It's essential to understand your risks. Older adults should talk to their doctor or pharmacist about RSV and ask if vaccination is right for them. Taking proactive steps now can help prevent severe illness later.
For more information and resources, visit SidelineRSV.com.
This holiday season, as families gather to celebrate, the Army Reserve is proud to reaffirm our commitment to those who serve and those who support them. Command Sergeant Major Gregory Betty shares more.
The Army Reserve supports our nation and invests in the future of our warrior citizens each and every day. Our soldiers remain combat ready to respond to today's ever-changing challenges with world-class training and career opportunities. The Army Reserve remained focused on building a stronger, more connected community. From the U.S. Army Reserve, happy holidays to all soldiers, families, civilians, and the communities that support us. Wherever you are this season, thank you for your service and dedication. Wishing you a joyful, safe, and peaceful holiday. Twice a citizen, combat ready, this will defend.
Visit usar.army.mil to learn more about the Army Reserve.
Cold and flu season is here, and families are searching for natural ways to support immunity. Roxana Asani, registered dietitian and nutritionist, has more.
Herbal remedies help strengthen the body's natural defenses for daily resilience and energy so you're ready for whatever the season brings.
For adults, that means stronger immunity and steady energy to keep up with work and family. For kids, it's about gentle, safe support parents can feel good about during the school year.
Not all immune support products are created equal. Look for quality-tested options with trusted ingredients. Immune and Energy for adults blends astragalus, ashwagandha, Siberian ginseng, and reishi. For kids ages 3 to 12, our Immune Daily Syrup features clinically researched herbs and raspberry flavor with zero sugar.
Harker Herbals, New Zealand's leading natural wellness company, has been making herbal remedies for 45 years. Now their immune and wellness products are available in the U.S. on Amazon and HarkerHerbals.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
Y'all gotta help each other right now.
We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan All-Stars. I'm Karen Cataline, part of the team. And we have, to wrap up the show today, Army veteran who saw combat during Iraq. He is an executive in the aerospace and defense industry and a former senior Pentagon official specializing in national security policy, finance, and government relations. His latest award-winning book is entitled Downriver, Memoir of a Warrior Poet. Ryan McDermott joins us right now. Thank you for coming along on this holiday week, Ryan McDermott. No,
thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Yes, and thank you for your service, sir. We appreciate it.
Oh, it is an honor, yes.
Well, we need it, and it seems as if we're living in times in which the people with the most noble aspirations and clearest values of good over evil are under the greatest attack. That seems to be. It's not that everyone makes those, lives always, never makes a mistake, but those who set those values, they're the ones who seem to be under attack by people who, frankly, have none. They have no values. So with that in mind, talk about Thanksgiving a little bit and about military families and what we as people who didn't serve need to be thinking about this Thanksgiving.
Well, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. I'm sitting in my son's apartment. I'm sort of teleworking this week from Columbus, Georgia, which is at Fort Benning, where he is training as an armor officer. And so it hits close to home. This week, my son, who actually wrote the afterword to my book. And, so my journey began like over 25 years ago and going into the Army. And I went to Iraq as a sort of, after 9/11 and everything, and saw a lot of combat. He was born right before I deployed. And so it's interesting being back at Fort Benning, where my training as an active duty officer began. And now as a father, I look forward to, his service. We went to church yesterday, and what makes me feel great is he has a great support network here and a community that embraces. And so that makes me feel good as a parent that there's community that supports him in his service. Mm-hmm. But, looking forward, it's an interest, he'll be going to a post in early next year. And, knowing the perils of combat the potential and in training, actually, there's a lot of risk in training. It's a different perspective as a military family member.
Yeah. Especially when it's your son and not you.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
And then you get to think about what your parents felt when you served, right?
Yes. The worry. When you're, being a service, when I was in Iraq, and I go into all this in the book, in my book, Downriver, is you're not really worried all the time. You're focused on the mission, on the attack, and there's a lot of confidence in that. And there's some moments of sort of fear, but there's a lot of adrenaline kicking in. There's other chapters in my book where I was on rear detachment, where I took care of families, or I was there to support the families of deployed soldiers. This was in 05. 2005. And I'll tell you, the worry is constant because they don't know. The military family members do not know if the soldier is in harm's way or not.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sometimes it's harder being the one watching your loved one and when you can't do much about it, right?
I think so. Absolutely.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say that I think absolutely. I don't think this is Military Families Month in addition to being Veterans and Military Families Month. I think our military family, this is maybe selfish on my part of being a military family member, but I've always thought this, that as a country, because they don't wear the uniform per se, we can do more to show respect and value to the military family members. And I think that's one message I hope to get out.
Well, you know, I think people who really revere and appreciate have enormous gratitude to our men mm-hmm. who serve and women who serve. They are often thanking not mm-hmm. just service members, but those families who serve with them, because they have to live with the absence of their loved one and carry on anyway and deal with the uncertainty. And that's why honor and character, without them, you got nothing, right?
No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah. The thing that I'm struck by, though, is that the country is so very, very divided right now. Are you seeing that more so now than ever before? Or at a time like Thanksgiving, I remember as I was growing up, people during Thanksgiving and whatever, we did come together. And I don't just mean that as a cliche, but Thanksgiving is a quintessentially American holiday in gratitude for our abundance and what have you. So speak to that a little bit, if you would. Do you find it different than when you were a youngster?
Oh, I definitely think it's different than when we were all younger. I mean, the media has changed. There's proliferation of lots of outlets. I think, you know, everyone can sort of attest to holidays where I think it's just best not to talk politics, just to try to focus on the things that bind us together. Generally speaking, I mean, pride in military service members is generally there. And hopefully for the country, but it is different. You know, it's a different environment we live in today. And I look for unifying messages and try to like, but it's interesting because it's like, sometimes it feels like, you know, where are the things that we agree? What do we disagree on? And, there are times I have family members who I have very I'll just say, nope, not going there. I don't want to have that discussion.
But see, here's the problem. Yeah. I mean, this is one of the things that I find frustrating is that for radical leftists, they don't want you to talk politics, but they get to talk all the politics they want. This is a way to shut people down. Now, I agree that the desire to be unifying is important, but there are times when you also have to stand up. I think that the image of Charlie Kirk going into the lion's den and talking to people who disagreed was a perfect example of that. He did both in a very amazing way. Well, I guess we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry. How do people get your book?
He did it the right way. I think he carried a message with the right tone.
Yeah.
So thank you for having me on.
Thanks. Ryan McDermott and his book, Downriver. Well, that does it for this edition of the Alan Nathan All-Stars. Happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. And may you have many, many more.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.